Ew, the new Skype noise is different and I hate it.
What? It sounds the same to me.
Nah, it's different. It's like all bellish.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 516, recorded on October 4th, 2018.
Welcome to the 516th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 350th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Linzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
Sounds like you got yourself a new mic there, Scott.
Yes, I do. It was not cheap, but it seems to be working very well.
Scott's getting into podcasting.
Yeah, I mean, it's far better than what you were using before, because you could hear the scratching and stuff. And I'm guessing you have one of those, I forgot what it's called. You know those things that go around a boom mic?
Pop filter?
It does have a little filter around it, yes.
Yeah, so we don't hear everything that's going on.
Yeah.
No clicking, no buzzing. So, anyway, we actually have a gaming flashback and a gaming history.
Awesome.
And it's in honor of Extra Credits, who actually recently did an episode based on this very thing. You know, I thought, you know, we should talk about that because we talked about when – I don't know if we talked about this – when in Ultima Online, everybody got flung into space because they had to reset everything. It's like when they killed Lord British. Everybody found themselves being flung into space by the people running the MMO at the time. And what happens to people in space happens in it. You know, you think you could survive in space? Nope, especially if you're a medieval peasant.
Right.
But no, this was actually something that backfired on Blizzard in a big way. And we'll be discussing it when you get to it. But right now, we're going to talk to what you've been playing. So, I'm going to go first. I just got in Vampyr a couple of days ago, but I haven't played it because I'm going to be discussing something I did play during that time. I still haven't gotten around to it. And it's actually one of the news items. Well, related to one of the news items. So, we'll talk about that later. And thing is, I've been looking forward to Vampyr for what? What is it? 2 years when we first saw it? Yeah, was it 2 years? Was it E3? A year ago, because you weren't at this past E3, but you were at the last E3.
Yeah, I was at
that's when they showed off Vampyr and Call of Cthulhu.
I was at 2017.
So, yeah, so, but I haven't started playing it because of this other game. So, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been...
playing.
Yeah, I've still been playing Dragon's Quest, but I think I'm getting near the end of the game now. It's...
You know, actually, they talked about a feature that people seem to really like, and maybe you've probably seen it, is if you stop playing the game for like 5 minutes, when you grab your controller back, it'll actually recap what you're doing.
No, I see the recap when I load my game. It'll give me a little quick recap.
Yeah, but it actually recaps it when you pause the game and have to do something else, and then when you come back, it'll say, oh, by the way.
No, it doesn't do that for me at all. And there's no pausing either, for that matter.
No, I mean when you leave the game alone for like 5 minutes or something. I don't think you've left the game alone for 5 minutes.
I have, and I come back and nothing happens. Like I said, there's a recap when I load my game, but there's no recap from when I put my controller down, walk away, and then come back. No.
Well, it may be the settings, I don't know, but other people have been talking about it.
That's still good. I like that. Like, that's a godsend in Witcher 3 because that game is so big, and it's nice when you come back, and it's like, here's what you were doing when you last left off.
Yeah, I mean, they do that when you load the game. But unfortunately, at least for me, it's a little out of sync. If you do things out of order, I think the recap gets confused, and it doesn't realize that maybe you've done something already, and then... Because what I did is, like I said, I did things a little bit out of order, and when I went to finally do them, it's like, oh, you just did this. It's like, no, I did that a while ago. And so it confused the recap when I reloaded. The game has been a lot of fun. And I'd like to say that it had I think I said before, but it had a Final Fantasy VI moment, followed by a Final Fantasy VII moment, followed by a Final Fantasy IV moment. And these are big moments. So if you played these games, you probably know what I'm referring to. So it, and I don't want to spoil it.
Someone's
going
to die now. Someone important to you is going to die. Great. You spoiled it for everybody. Even though I've never played Final Fantasy VII, I know about what's
that
her face
moment. But I mean, it's, you know, it's ties into the Final Fantasy VI moment.
You know what? To all you there who love Final Fantasy, stop getting moony over her friggin' death. I don't care.
Well, I always figured she had to die in order for...
I cared more about the dog dying in Fable 2 than her. Although I knew the dog was going to die. They don't make you so attached to a feature like that unless they're going to planning on taking it away at some point.
I also did see the Minecon event this past weekend, and they revealed the new update that's coming for 1.14, and they're going to have... It's called the Village and Pillage, and they're going to have these pillagers that attack the towns, and the villages are also going to look different. They're going to have different house structures, and the villagers themselves are going to have biome-specific and job-specific skins, and they've introduced crossbows and bamboo and pandas, and there was a vote for what biome to update next, so they're getting taigas updated. So that's also cool, too, I think.
You know what's really neat? And all the other happened that I saw with Power Morphicon, and that is there are a lot of young kids there, you know, at Minecon. And it's nice to see that. I mean, you have all these cons that are 18 or over, but sometimes, you know, it's nice to see a con that says, yeah, we want kids here.
That's true. And they get to show their
creativity. Sometimes you get it at Comic-Con.
But... Oh, and there's also going to be a Minecraft Dungeons release, which I guess is their version of story mode, where you get to go through dungeon crawls with four other friends, or three other friends, totaling four.
Well, was this thing something that was voted on? Because
no,
I remember
the
that they actually
not,
had a mine.
The Dungeons, they're doing on their own. I guess this has been something they've been wanting to do, and they just released it. The thing that was voted on was the biomes, whether it was going to be taiga.
Yeah, I mean, at Minecon Earth, they said they were going to have people voting for a biome.
Yeah, and they did that. There was either the taiga, savanna, or desert, and taiga won. So taiga will be updated in 1.14, and I guess 1.15 will have the desert and savanna update.
We should really talk about what a taiga is.
Yeah, it's a spruce forest that's usually cold. Wolves.
Well, it's also called a snow forest.
Yeah, snow forest. And it has wolves and foxes and not too much else, but now it's going to get foxes and berries, and you can do campfires somehow. I'm not sure how that they're going to implement that, but we'll have to wait and see. And there might be other things along in that. That's just like their teaser, I guess, for it.
Actually, you know, I could just say it one. The taiga is all of Canada.
Yeah, that's true.
It's most of Canada. I mean, it's also a large part of Russia, too.
Yeah. Spruce forests are very big,
yeah. I mean, it's the second largest biome on the entire planet, actually.
Yeah.
And that's only because the oceans are the number one.
Yeah.
And I think people are bored with deserts anyway. Who cares about deserts? You always see deserts all the time.
Oh, they want to put palm trees in the deserts and some other stuff, and that'll have to wait until the next update, I think, and then that'll come out, and they'll...
I'm surprised the savannah didn't win, because the savannah has, you know, all the African animals, you know, sort of like, you know, grassland, except it's closer to desert than it is
and they were
going to
introduce the baobab tree. It's this really thick trunk tree with a very an arc of branches on the top with leaves, and it just looks kind of crazy. So those will be two trees we'll eventually get in 1.15, which is always nice to get. I hope their turnaround is faster than the last update for aquatic update. That it took like a year, so he would like to see faster updates for these two, I think.
Right. And next on the Earth podcast, we're going to talk about coniferous forests now. How about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
So this last week, I busted into Mega Man 11.
Ah. So here's the funny thing about Mega Man 11. It's sort of like, oh, so you wanted Mega Man, you wanted a Mega Man game. You wanted Mighty No. 9, right? Well, we're going to do Mighty No. 9 right, because it looks like, it makes Mighty No. 9 look like Mega Man 10.5.
It is,
you
beautiful.
Know? It's like,
right.
But I'm just saying, it's like it has the same cartoony style that that Mighty No. 9 had, but better gameplay.
More than that, it actually feels and plays just like a regular Mega Man, but with some mindful additions. Like,
yeah, especially the way he has that goofy pose when he's jumping.
Yeah.
Looks like he's doing Saturday Night Fever when he jumps.
This game feels like the first real evolution of a Mega Man game since Mega Man X4.
Of course, because Mega Man 9 and 10 were just basically 8-bit rehashes.
Yeah, and they were still good Mega Man games. Like, as far as Mega Man games went, they were still fun to play. But they didn't introduce anything new. They were just sort of the same 8 bosses. You'd go through them, do your thing, whatnot. This one, they introduced this speed gear, this gear system, where one button press will slow down time and allow you to sort of plot out your steps with better accuracy. And the other gear system will allow you to power up your shots and fire super mega buster shots. And they both run on the same meter that if it maxes out, you end up having to wait for it to cool down, and you can't use either for a moment. There's also a thing where you can activate both at the same time and activate a super mode, but like and you can go faster and you can fire super shots, but once it runs out, it like halves the strength of your Mega Buster for a sec, and you have to wait for it to cool off again. So it's a unique, especially the speed gear system is a super unique addition to the game that gives it all sorts of new possibilities when it comes to like plotting out speed runs and just figuring out your pathing through a level.
You know, I'm wondering if Mega Man 11 would have happened if Mighty No. 9 didn't have that Kickstarter campaign. Because I think the amount of money people did towards backing Mighty No. 9 told Capcom, hey, you know what? People still give a shit about getting a new version of Mega Man, so why don't you get at it, you know?
If that was the truth, then they would have made Mega Man Legends 3 by now, but I think it's just the fact that...
Who says they're not going to make it? I mean, they have the Mega Man bundle right now, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't made to sell just 11.
I mean, they've seen things like Mighty No. 9 and Azure Striker Gunvolt, which is, in my mind, completely a Mega Man game. And then they saw, what was that one? It was like a co-op Mega Man indie game that came out recently. I can't remember. You were telling us about us.
Scott?
Hmm?
Oh, you mean
the 20XX. Yes.
20XX.
20XX.
Yes.
So people have been expressing that they still like these games, and there's been plenty of platformers coming out lately to push that point forward. So I can't say that Mega Man 11 wouldn't have come out without Mighty No. 9, but...
I think Mighty No. 9 actually, what's it called, reignited interest in the genre. I mean, yeah, you had the indie game, you know, that you mentioned before, but I think it inspired 20XX and more actual Mega Man games. Especially if you look at Mega Man 11, you think, you know, that sort of kind of looks like Mighty No. 9.
Maybe. I'd have to see when Mega Man 9 and 10 came out. But point being, like, good show so far. I've played through the entire game. I've beaten it. It's
What kind of ridiculous achievements does it have, then?
I don't check that stuff, although I have been testing myself.
Are you going to have, like Mega Man, with the only fire one shot the entire game?
So there are challenges that you can unlock afterwards where there are things like that. Oh. There's actually a challenge where you have to complete the level with as few jumps as possible. There's one where you have to fire the X-Buster or as few times as possible, and then there's one where you have to kill as few enemies as possible. And it's interesting post-game stuff like that that'll make it worth going back to just to test myself. But I've also been playing with the time attack mode. I really knocked it out of the park on a run of one of the boss stages recently where I got my time down to like 3 minutes and 15 seconds on a level. And I was so proud of myself because it was like a run that I barely stopped. I ran through the whole thing and I didn't take a...
You are Twin Galaxies. You know about speed runs. They're going to make your 315 look like you picked your nose while playing it. You know? Look, I did it in 1 minute and 5 seconds.
Yeah, but today I checked and there was somebody that put in a 2 minute and 20 second score. But the cool thing...
So you're only 40 seconds off.
But the cool thing about that is that... you can actually see other people's replays of their run. And so I'm looking at these people's replays and learning things from their replays and seeing mistakes that they made that I don't make and figuring out how I'm going to make my run better.
You know, here's the thing. I don't mind speedrunners in arcade games. And I do mind speedrunners in World of Warcraft and other games or, you know, stuff like that because it's like, what's the point, you know? But with a game that's about mechanics... You know, purely about mechanics, an arcade game like Mega Man or Donkey Kong or whatever stuff, you know, where the story isn't there, and if there is a story, it's sort of incidental. Like, who gives a shit about the story of Mega Man? You know, it's basically just shooting, fighting, you know, and all that stuff. You know, I mean, I could stand a speed run, say, of Cuphead because that, you know, the story is there, but it's not really integral to the gameplay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a narrative. It's just, yeah, we're going to shoot things. So what I love about speedrunners and those types of games is that they're always... scientifically trying to improve it, you know. And for those of you who don't know, there's another kind of speed run. I forgot the technical term for it, but it's where they program the computer, you know, to do moves rather than actually, you know, holding the joystick or whatever, mouse or keyboard or whatever, and doing it. They actually have it so that they see if they can get as fast as they can with a computer, you know, to do stuff that requires like a computer's. What do they call that kind of speedrun? Is it assisted?
That's called a tool-assisted speedrun or a TAS.
Right. So it's like, you know, I enjoy watching people see how much they can break down these games and see just how fast they can get it.
Yeah, and this is going to be one that sort of this is going to be one that cultivates that level of play for a while because the difference between the double gear system makes all the difference where you can play with these power like not only does the power up gear boost your regular shots, but it gives special attributes to all the other weapons you collect through the game. So like. There's one that makes you dash forward, and with the power-up gear, it makes you not only dash forward, but also not have any hesitation on the end of it that you would normally get if you were just using the regular weapon. So that's by using the power gear with that weapon, you can actually dash through an entire screen without having to touch anyone if you time your hits perfectly with the power gear. And that's the kind of thing that people are going to figure out and do crazy stuff with that double gear system.
You know, that thinking about tool-assisted runs, and you know, it makes me think about Barnstormer, you know, and how they proved that the guy was a liar. Makes me want to go on eBay and see if I can find a Barnstormer patch. Because I did get a score good enough to get a patch, but I was so young, it's like I forgot that I had to take a picture of the screen and then send it off to Activision.
Yeah.
I want my patch, damn it.
It wouldn't matter anymore anyways. One of the worst things that we found out when we were investigating that story was that Activision just threw away the pictures that the people sent them after they were done with them. Because at the time, the creators were like, we're just making toys. These are toys. We're giving people their props, but these are toys. So we don't need to keep this stuff.
I don't care.
I do.
I want my patch.
I absolutely give a shit. They threw away history.
I want my patch. That's the history I want. And I'm pretty sure there are people who are selling it, but the thing is, I'm more than betting it's like $50, $100 to get a single patch. It's like, no. I mean, there was one game that had two different patches, depending on how well you did. If you did the max, they had this special patch. You know, they should start doing that again, actually. You know, somehow, you know, if you don't have to send in a video, you send in a streaming game stream, you know, record a game stream and send it in, they send you a patch.
Yeah.
They need to bring back gameplay patches again. Like, you can just, can you imagine going to E3 and someone will come in with like 500 patches all over their jacket? Which reminds me, are you going to E3 next
year? I'm
going to
try. There's no reason I shouldn't, because I've made...
You're with Twin Galaxies? You can say, I'm with Twin Galaxies, motherfuckers.
I've made some changes in my life that aren't even Twin Galaxies that pretty much guarantee that I should be at events throughout the year.
Yeah, but I have to say, I'm with Twin Galaxies. I go. We're part of the industry, damn it.
Well, getting a press pass isn't the hard part. It's the...
Well, it is for me when I have to – I don't know about TMR Zoo. You know, you have to – I'm hoping it keeps its subscriber rate up so that, you know, they say, oh, it's not a small rinky-dink state. You can go.
No, it's being halfway across the country from it. That's the issue that I run into.
Yeah, that's the best thing about living in L.A. is I don't have to worry about hotel or flight. Just – I'm here.
Oh, yeah, and booking travel to L.A. and lodgings is not cheap.
Well, I mean, lodging isn't that, because, you know, when I was living in New York, I just went to the Travel Lodge that's on Sunset in Vermont, and it was like $60 a month, and it's like, yeah, that's good, you know, get 5 days, $300. It may be like $80 a month now. $80 a month is really cheap. $80 a night, I'm not sure right now, but the Travel Lodge was great because you just hop into the Red Line and boom, there you were at the LA Convention Center. So anyways, we're going to move on to Gaming Flashback, and as I promised last week, we're going to talk about Prince of Persia, the 2008 game. Prince of Persia is an action-adventure and platforming video game developed by Ubisoft Montreal and published by Ubisoft. It is part of the Prince of Persia franchise. I'm going to put quotes around that, because they only had the one game and the one DLC, and that's all, and then they rebooted it yet again after it came out. The game was released in the United States on December 2nd, 2008 for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, and on December 9th for Microsoft Windows. It was released on March 24th, 2009 for Mac OS X via the Cider engine. The game is set in ancient Persia, with a player character whose name is not revealed in the game. He's only called the Prince, you know, and we're not even sure if he is a prince. Although the stories that he tells sort of hints, yeah, he's a prince, and he became really disillusioned and became a thief instead. He is accompanied by a woman named Elika, whom he met after a large sandstorm diverted him from his course, and he ended up on a mysterious land. Players may traverse different environments using his acrobatic ability to scale walls and even crawl on the ceilings. Throughout the journey, players combat various enemies as they attempt to cleanse the land of corruption. Prince of Persia revolves around gameplay mechanics that the producer, Ben Matz, identified as pillars of the Prince of Persia series, an acrobatic hero exploring a Persian environment with a balanced mixture of acrobatic combat and puzzle solving. The premise of Prince of Persia is that the player travels around the game to heal specifically designated spots of land. The game was well received by most critics, receiving an 81, 85, and 82% on Metacritic for the Xbox 360, PS3, and PC versions, respectively. A single DLC epilogue took place after the game's cliffhanger, but it ended on another cliffhanger. Now, I think some players didn't like it is they called it, quote-unquote, too easy. So here's the thing. If you do a wrong move and you jump or you somehow manage to get yourself killed, Elika will come swoop by, pick you up, and place you on a spot that's you know, the closest to where you died, because she can't plop you just anywhere, right? Because that's too easy. But here's the thing. The Prince of Persia series has always had a rewind mechanic. It's no different. And the other thing is, you know what happens when you die at a video game? You log in, you just go back to the last spawn point. So what this does is it takes away that downtime in which you have to look at the game over screen, load the game again, play again. It's no different. And if you keep killing yourself too many ways, you don't get an achievement. You know, one of the achievements says, finish the game without dying or without putting yourself in, you know, having Elika save you. I don't know, something like less than 100 times. And the other thing that people didn't like about the game was the ending. Okay, so spoiler warning on a 10-year-old game. And, you know, I hesitate about giving this spoiler because I love the story. So at the end, you find out that, see, here's the thing. Elika is collecting these light seeds, you know, and you use it to open up new areas. But essentially, she's collecting them so that she can place them into a tree and four other trees that will trap Ahriman, who's the god of darkness, who you're trying to entrap, mm-hmm. right? In the process, basically she's taking all her life energy and putting it into the plant, and she kills herself. So the end ends with her dying. And you pick up her lifeless body, and you walk from the temple where the tree is. And then the end credits roll. But here's the thing. Those end credits have a purpose, which I'm going to explain a little bit later. So you put her on an altar, you pound your fist, and then if you continue playing, you go to the trees, destroy them, grabbing their life, and you destroy the last tree, and you take it and you put it back into Elika, resurrecting her. Which, by the way, is what her father did, who's called the Morning King. He's basically because his father made a deal. Her father made a deal with Ahriman. You know, if he let the god of darkness go, would he resurrect his daughter? Which is what he did. And you're basically doing the same thing. And she wakes up and she asks him why. And he just walks silently with her in his arms as a god of darkness just whooshes right over you. It's really just chilling and awesome at the same time. So people were pissed off that you were basically undoing all the work you did in the game. And here's my answer. Well, you know what? The credits ran. You know what that means? You didn't have to resurrect her. You just turn off the game and stop. That's it. It's like the Stanley Parable. You know, when you're in that death trap, you know, the woman says, well, there's one way you can get out. Well, yeah, the way out is to turn off the game. Now, the epilogue takes place after that. And the prince actually gives a good reason why he resurrected her. And that is, he said, look, you know, this is just a temporary fix, right? Because he's going to get out no matter what. It's just going to happen like 1,000 years from now. So why don't I resurrect you and we can find a way to permanently trap him? Unfortunately, the epilogue ends on a downer in which she leaves him in a death trap, says, fuck you, I'm going to do this myself, I don't care about you, because you resurrected me and you didn't do what I wanted you to do. So it ends on that cliffhanger, which will never be resolved now. Mm-hmm. It was recently released, backwards compatible on Xbox One, and I still had my disc, so I played it. And one thing about the game is that it's friggin' gorgeous, both before and after you heal the land. And I mentioned last week, it's done in a cel-shaded way that it will never look dated, because it's basically, you know, a cartoon. And there's so many great things now. One of the bosses, it actually makes me smile. So it's called the concubine, right? And she creates like a dozen Elikas. And you have to figure out which one is your Elika. Now, you can either waste time and start attacking them, but you know what you do? You jump off the side of the tower to kill yourself. The real Elika will save
you.
And that's how that puzzle is solved. It's taking the gameplay mechanics and makes the gameplay mechanics itself a puzzle.
Yeah, this was Prince of Persia, like the new series, is something that I always wanted to go to, but like never made time for. And I regret that because it's always looked good. Like it looks like it holds up to the test of time. Every one of the games. And
well, 2008 especially, because, like I said, it takes – here's the one thing about why I say you should play the 2008 game. At least you don't have to worry about prequels and sequels and all that, because it's just one game and then the DLC. And even the DLC is – you don't have to play that either. So you already have the entire game packed up into one story. It's a depressing – I was depressed at first at the ending, but afterwards, you know, I felt sort of hopeful. By the way, the music – is amazing. It won GameStudio's Best Music of the Year in 2008. If you knew the other games that were out that year, that's really saying something.
Yeah. And like my experience with Prince of Persia is literally that I played the 1989 version. And
yeah, that's here. Jordan Mechner, yes.
And that one, for people that don't know, it played sort of like Another World. What's the one?
Blackthorn.
Yeah.
Karateka.
And it was just like very like it was fluid. It was a fluid platformer, and
yeah, that was the biggest thing about it was that in 1989, people were just gobsmacked at the character animation. That was the entire reason to play
it. Man, it was graphic when you messed up.
Yeah.
Well, here's the other thing. You couldn't lose the game. The only thing that would happen is if you didn't do it in a lot of time, the princess would die.
Yeah.
But I'm saying the character animation was light years beyond anything else in the time. I mean, basically, you know, when you had character animation, it was basically, you know, Mario, you know, like four or five frames of animation to run. No, this prince running, jumping, grabbing onto stuff, swinging. It was like a 24 frames per second movie. Mm-hmm. It was that smooth.
Yeah, it was really good. And like that, if the goal was to bring back Prince of Persia and like innovate it in a way that still was amazing, they did it. They did it in the 2008 version. And
you know, I don't know if did you play the remastered version of it?
I didn't.
It was on XBLA.
Like I said,
okay, they actually remade Prince of Persia, the original Prince of Persia. You know, 1981 with lighting effects and textures.
That sounds cool.
And I believe it is backwards compatible too.
That does sound cool. Like I said, these are some great games. Whether you want to go all the way back to 1989 and play with that, or if you go to the new series, like there really isn't a bad Prince of Persia game that I know of.
Oh, yeah, the one that came out after Prince of Persia. I think that was the movie tie-in, no less. It wasn't really, really all that good. It was basically rote. You know, it's like, it's a Prince of Persia game. We're going to give people what they want.
Because there's several... I'm seeing several Prince of Persia games here for 2005, 2004, 2008.
Yeah, those are the original ones. And the one that came out before this Prince of Persia, I think it was the 2005 one, they made the prince so emo.
Yeah.
And it was so dark, and it's like people just, That's why 2008, even though story-wise it's a lot darker than... It went back to a jokey, you know, carefree prince, and we don't even know if he's a prince. I mean, they hint around, yes, he's a prince. I gave you the link, by the way, to Prince of Persia Classic. So you can see the graphics on that. And it was released in 2007. I wonder if they released it in they most definitely released it in anticipation of 2008. But 2008 is basically the black sheep of the entire series. It is unlike anything that came before and anything that came after. And it's pretty sad because that's the one I like the best.
Yeah. I really like these games. I sing their praises. I wasn't able to play the ones that came out from like 2003 to 2005, but I have played
2003 is considered a classic.
Available on GOG.
But they are absolutely worth people's time. Just because I haven't doesn't mean you shouldn't. give them a go. I would recommend if you end up liking them, definitely check out the older ones. Like if you're into retro gaming, because those are worth a go as well. Yeah. Either find an emulator and go for the original, or do the Shadow and the Flame remake that they made of it that Jenna was talking about.
Well, here's the thing. You know, Prince of Persia Classic is indeed backwards compatible. I just made sure. So if you want that, it's an easy $10 to do. It's basically a remastered version of the original 1989 game. And, you know, in Australia, it only costs $3.
Yeah. I have no time to play it now, though, because all sorts of things are about to happen in this month.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of stuff, especially Red Dead Redemption
2. I'm glad that I was able to beat Mega Man 11 so fast, because now Fist of the North Star Lost Paradise has come out, and I need to play that. And then,
well, here's the thing. I'm pretty sure that when you play Red Dead Redemption 2, it's just going to be a black hole that sucks you in. You can tell that it's getting ready to be released because Rockstar's been releasing gameplay video after gameplay video, mm-hmm. showing you some of the, you know... And the thing that I was most interested in is the random crap you can do that has nothing, you know, like playing poker and stuff like that. They still haven't talked about multiplayer. I'm pretty sure it's good. They're going to announce the big BR when it comes to that. Everybody's expecting it. If there is no Battle Royale in Red Dead Redemption 2, everybody will be shocked.
Yeah. I'm excited, though.
Now, I know, Scott, you're looking forward to Red Dead Redemption 2, aren't you?
No, I'm looking forward to getting Pathfinder Kingmaker game, which is another, another isometric.
That's gotten mixed reviews. Hmm? That's gotten mixed reviews.
That's fine. I don't care what reviewers think.
It's an isometric RPG. I don't care. Damn it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go play it and love it. And yeah. I haven't played it yet, but I've looked at some Let's Plays that people have done. And it's, like I said, isometric. It looks like it has good graphics and nice music. And I'd like to see what story they've done with this, because it looks like it's in the title, Kingmaker. You're making a kingdom, so you're going to build an empire, it seems like. So I'm curious to see how that plays out.
You know a game I still haven't played that I want to? I want to play Tyranny, damn it. I haven't played it yet.
You should play that.
Especially since I got you that bit. So, TJ, what were you about to say?
Oh, I was looking over the list of games for this month. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I could care less about.
Well, here's the thing. Assassin's Creed Odyssey has been actually getting some good reviews because they took a lot of the stuff in Origins that sucked, like levels, you know, where you have to grind. Oh, you can't do this mission until you're level 5. You know, that sucked.
This is still me saying yawn. Yeah. But Soul Calibur comes out in the middle of this month. And that's
And they've been showing some new characters for that too. They keep on releasing characters.
Sure have. And they had a network test this last weekend, which I also played. Everything was running very smooth. It's like Tekken runs pretty smooth. Soul Calibur 6 runs smoother than Tekken does. It's really like it feels very.
You're talking about online, right? You're talking about the online
game. Yeah, but even just gameplay as a whole. Okay. Like, all the inputs feel extremely streamlined. The comeback factor is super fun. And it's a really enjoyable fighting game.
Because, you know, I don't give a rat's ass about multiplayer online for fighting games.
Yeah, right? But I'm talking about, like, even just playing it in general, it felt really, really good. And seeing a game that can play online like that is also very good, because netcode is one of the hardest things to nail down for fighting games.
Yeah. I actually started playing Injustice 2 again, and well, the funny thing is I got an achievement for the first time in over a year.
What was the achievement?
And I really should play more Injustice 2 because I have all the characters and I have all the DLC.
Hmm.
So, are you going to have a hard time as me picking the game of the year for 2018?
Well, I don't know. You know, there are games that I thought were going to be shoo-ins for game of the year. Spore, that didn't turn out the way I wanted, or Mass Effect Andromeda. You know, so I never know what's going to be good. I mean, I could pick up Red Dead Redemption 2 and say, oh, God, I wasted my money on this piece of crap.
I doubt it.
I don't think that's going to happen, but I mean, I've been playing long enough to know that, you know, games that I thought were fantastic in previews and all that stuff, like, what was the name of that game? My game of the year, Brink. My game of E3 one year was Brink. And it turned out to be, yeah. I mean, PC version was passion, but from what I heard, the console version was total suckage. Which is a shame, because Team Fortress with parkour, you know, Team Fortress meets Mirror's Edge should have been a win.
Nah, yeah, I played.
And also with something for everybody to do, that's one thing that I wish a lot more games would do. It's like, well, if you do this action, you're going to get experience, you know. Sort of like encouraging people to do, you know, support and stuff like that.
I mean, somebody eventually nailed it down, and that game is called Dying Light.
They actually, that's not a multiplayer. That's not. But they did do Dirty Bomb, which is the unofficial sequel to Brink, and from what I understand, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Dirty Bomb. I'm just saying that Dying Light took everything that Brink was supposed to be and made it better.
Well, I'm holding out for Dying Light 2. And that one has our friend Chris Avalon having a part of it.
Whole thing should be good. And I actually, that is one of the few games that I do hope that they add a Battle Royale system onto, because that would...
Well, I just hope it's good, period. I mean,
it will be.
You never know. You never know. The games that you're really looking forward to most, it's like sometimes they can drop big turds.
All they have to do is do something as good as Dying Light. but from what I've seen, like it looks like it's going to be good. They're upping the parkour, they're upping the threat, and they're upping the exploratory area, which Dying Light already had with the expansions. Dying Light was a massive game.
Yeah. Anyways, you know, I don't know how this has anything to do with Prince of Persia. I don't know where we got from here to Prince of Persia. But I think it's because we were talking about remakes and then we talked about platformers and then we talked about, you know, stuff that's coming out. But we might as well depress the hell out of ourselves now. Go ahead with the first news item, TJ.
Telltale Games has seemingly laid off its remaining staff from GameSpot. With no warning, Telltale laid off the majority of its staff in September, offering them no severance. It did, however, keep on a skeleton staff of 25 people that were said to be staying on for the foreseeable future. Just 2 weeks after word of the situation first broke, it appears that even those remaining staffers have now been let go. Former narrative designer Rachel Knoll shared the news on Twitter, writing, "Hey, remember how there was going to be a skeleton crew staying on for a while, and I was part of it? Nah, JK, we all just got laid off too." A source confirmed the statement with GameSpot. Claims of mismanagement at Telltale have been abound for some time, and Noel seems to reaffirm those allegations in a follow-up tweet stating, "I've seen things you wouldn't believe. 80-hour crunch weeks, mismanagement of some of the industry's top talent. All of those moments will be lost in time, like tears and rain."
Yeah, she didn't see sea beams or fighting near the Tannhauser Gate. No. She saw 80-hour crunch weeks.
Prior to this, Noelle had confirmed that she was among those still with the company and that she was working on the remaining TTG project. The Walking Dead's final season, second episode of 4, just launched as the layoffs took place, and it's been unclear if the remaining episodes will ever be completed. Telltale had previously suggested it's seeking to finish up the series, and on Friday at New York Comic Con, Walking Dead creator Robert Kirkman offered some hope to those wanting to see the conclusion. "Stay tuned," he said. "Everyone involved is trying to make sure Clementine's story is told. I'm not concerned at the moment with telling that story in the comics." A day after Episode 2 was released, Telltale requested the final season be pulled from various marketplaces, including Steam, GOG, the PlayStation Store, and the Microsoft Store. In a statement issued to The Verge, a Telltale representative reiterated its intentions and still working to find a way to hand off production of episodes 3 and 4 so that the season can be completed. The company added, "The outcome of those efforts will determine when and how the final season returns to stores."
I mean, even though it's delisted, you know, if you're going to go into the if you bought game 1, the first episode, you can still download it because you download it within the software itself usually. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, we still have the lawsuit happening, you know, for unjust layoff. And it's just one big mess, you know. And, you know, I have to say, you know, the past 2 years I saw the cracks at E3, you know, from the company. Because you deal with these people, you know, on a yearly basis. And you could tell that something was off, you know, that... You know, and I'm not even talking about direct. I'm talking about people who are in the industry, who are talking to me about Telltale like a dying manatee. You know, and this was 2 years ago. I don't know if you had the same experience at the E3 that you attended.
I wasn't in contact with Telltale at that E3.
It doesn't have to be in contact with Telltale. It has to be in contact with anybody in the industry talking about Telltale.
No, I really wasn't anywhere near it during the time. But, like, it really does suck just because promise after promise, and then all these horrible working conditions being revealed, and whew, what a mess. Like, even if Telltale did find some miraculous way to bring it back and be like, okay, here's the final episodes of The Walking Dead, at what cost? Like, I would rather 275 people still had jobs than Telltale be able to release some subpar chapters of a game that people are just dying to have.
Yeah, that, you know, it bothers me because it's, you know, with gamers, it's always, but what about me syndrome, you know? What about you? I don't give a shit about you.
Yeah.
You know, you spend your money. Caveat emptor.
I agree with TJ because when you change the creative people behind the story, you're going to lose what that vision was, and it's probably not going to be the same thing that originally was intended.
It's the same writer. No, but what TJ is saying is that, yeah, you get the games. What about the people who've been fired?
That's what I mean. I am talking about them.
And you're talking about the game being different because other new people are working on it.
Because the people that were working on it were going to be fired and not be able to complete that vision, and that it's going to be something totally different, and you should care.
It's always the same vision. It's Robert Kirkman's vision. It's the Telltale boss's vision. We're not talking about story makers. We're talking about the actual people who are making the textures. Yeah. You know, they don't have a vision. It's just them doing the grunt work. You know, it's like, does a janitor have a vision when he's when he's working in a school? No, it's not a vision. It's just doing grunt work, but he's still earning a paycheck.
Yeah.
And now you just, what I'm betting is going to happen is they're just going to hire people who are younger, just out of college, who are willing to do 80 hours a week and get paid less.
With the lawsuits coming in, I don't think Telltale is going to be hiring anyone anytime soon.
It doesn't have to be Telltale. It can be someone else who just buys a license from them.
That's what I think is more likely to happen, is that I think Telltale is going to just completely go under and have to sell off all their license and who were we just talking about last week? What's the company?
Well, we can talk about THQ, because THQ Nordic just bought the rights to Kingdoms of Amalur.
I guess we could talk about how Sierra went down, also probably due to mismanagement, it seems like. At least Ken Williams admitted that, the failure was on his part. And what else we got? I guess
Microsoft. No, I was going to say Interplay. We were talking about that last week.
That's right.
I really do feel like Telltale is headed for an Interplay situation.
No, it's more like a THQ. Here's the thing: THQ owned licenses. You know, they're broken up, but people bought the licenses. You know, Telltale borrows other people's licenses. So what's probably going to happen is that Dark Horse Comics or Robert Kirkman are just going to find another developer.
Yeah.
They own the license. By the way, speaking of THQ, are you looking forward to Darksiders 3?
I didn't play Darksiders 1 and 2. It's interesting. I know people love those games. They seem like a sort of... I don't know. They seem sort of...
Well, here's the thing. Darksiders 2 is often compared to Zelda, Darksiders 3 is being called Zelda meets Dark Souls.
Yeah, that doesn't sound that fun.
It seemed like a hack and slash game, so I didn't find it all that.
Well, it was a hack and slash game the same way that Zelda is a hack and slash game. If you ever played the original Zelda,
You don't have to fight the enemies in Zelda. You can ignore them most of the time. There's no grinding for levels. You don't have to collect gems or anything from them. You can skip them, do the puzzles, go find whatever it is you need to find, and avoid the enemies half the time at least.
There are the rooms where it like locks you in and you have to fight whatever's there.
But it's like one little room. It's not. You don't have to fight thousands of enemies. You don't. You can. It doesn't feel hack and slash when you can avoid enemies.
It's the Zelda of God of Wars.
But Kingdoms of Amalur is interesting because Kingdoms of Amalur was a shoddy game, but it had a lot of good ideas in it.
I did like Kingdoms of Amalur, but like it didn't get it didn't.
It had some interesting gameplay innovations, but the other part, the problem with it was so generic.
It also just didn't get a lot of love from the community. Like it, they're talking about re-releasing it, but like for who? Are people going to care about it this time?
They purchased the license, so that what's it called? There's going to be a new one. The problem is it was the baby of a piece of shit named Kurt Schilling. Who desperately wanted to make his own MMO. So Kingdoms of Amalur was supposed to be the RPG that would precede the MMO that it would be based on.
I don't think that MMO.
And they started, you know, they worked on the MMO, but then Chaffee, another asshole, just put the kibosh on it because he was the governor of Rhode Island. He wanted to show how big and bad he was. And look, video games are bad, so I'm going to smack down this one video game.
I don't know. People didn't care back then, so I wonder if they'll care now.
The only thing that bothers me is that THQ Nordic delayed Dragon Alliance Rage. And that's the game I was looking forward to.
I do want to play that one.
I want to scratch my Jagged Alliance itch.
Yeah, I do want to play that one. I can always go for some good strategy. And
Well, not only strategy, but it's like, if those of you, did we discuss Jagged Alliance? I think we did. The big thing about Jagged Alliance is that everybody has their own personality, and if you piss them off, they're just going to refuse to work
for you. Yeah, you're basically running a whole bunch of mercenaries, and they have their own personalities and likes and dislikes and tension and sanity and all that jazz.
And the thing is that unlike the other Jagged Alliance games in which you hire people from a pool, you're stuck with a couple of people because the plot is that you're stuck on this island with these mercenaries, and these are the mercenaries you're going to have to deal with, and if you don't like them, all tough shit, they're the ones you have. And I think they still have permadeath, too.
Yeah, which is a good thing. That should be part of Jagged Alliance.
Well, it always has been. But now you just can't go to the mercenary network where you have all these dossiers of these mercenaries you can buy, and you don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, go ahead.
Nothing. I was just saying. Yeah, that's a shame that it was pushed back. But you know what? I hope they take the time to do it well.
Yeah. Getting back to Telltale, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I've been in this business for 30 years. I have no idea what's going to happen with that company. There's so many things that could happen. The thing that I'm predicting will happen, it's going to be an Atari situation in which there'll be a Telltale. It's just going to be completely different people who just bought the name of the company.
I really do hope that I know that a lot of studios are picking up the talent that got left by the wayside by Telltale, which is great because those people will do great elsewhere.
Yeah, that's kind of limited because we already talked about this last week. Like one person had just moved here from another country, so they're going to have to get out of the country because their work visa was now invalid after 5 days. And another guy moved across the United States, and it's like, oh, I don't have a job anymore. What am I going
to
do?
Yeah, it does suck. Terribly for a lot of people, and I hope that they find their way to their feet. I'm happy to see that some people are finding their way into other parts of the industry because clearly these people did put in hard work and clearly they will put in the work to belong somewhere else.
Yeah, it is really shitty. They don't deserve to be let go like this, but it seems to happen, and it's unfortunate when it does.
Let's talk about some brighter news. Hey, Scott, take the next news item.
Nintendo to launch updated Switch next year. This is from Eurogamer. Nintendo will launch an updated version of the Switch in 2019, according to a Wall Street Journal report. There's no firm detail on what this will entail, however. The article paywall simply mentions a brighter, thinner screen as one of the several possible options. As for a release date, a broad summer to late 2019 release window is apparently on the cards. An earlier Wall Street Journal article paywall from March this year stated the opposite, that Nintendo was holding off on Switch 2.0 to make money on peripherals instead. but after several years on sale, a refresh for Nintendo's console is hardly surprising, especially after a noticeable quieter year for Switch following the console's meteoric launch. Back in March, Digital Foundry put together its thoughts for what Nintendo may target in the inevitable Switch 2.0 model to boost on console's power and improve the look of the existing games.
You know, I think if Nintendo was banking on people buying their peripherals at $70 and $80, no, that's not going to happen, especially with third-party manufacturers out there.
That's true. I don't like the idea of having to upgrade the console. I mean, the whole point of consoles was not having to upgrade constantly versus PC.
I don't think it's going to be an upgrade like the Xbox One X, in which it's a more powerful. I just think it's going to be another, you know, SKU in which, yeah, sort of like when the 3DS, say, went to the 2DS, right? There's no real change in the games. You know, it's just, you know, making it look better, yeah. You know?
Yeah, like the they released Zelda Link to the Past, but you could only play it on the new 3DS. I don't understand how the current 3DS wasn't powerful enough to play that Zelda when it was on the SNES in the 80s. Or 90s, sorry. And it just seems crazy. I don't understand that.
Actually, I made a bad analogy. Consider it like going from the 3DS to the 3DS XL.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it would be like... To me, it's like, you know, when Xbox 360 launched, there was the 30-gig and 60-gig version, and then eventually they released the 120-gig version, and then they released the Slim that had a built-in hard drive that you didn't have to swap out. I think that – I feel like this will probably be the Slim version of the Switch, which, I mean, like
– Switch is pretty slim.
I know, which –
Well, making the PS2 slim meant taking the PS3 slim was basically taking out the PS2 emulator.
Yeah, but the Xbox 360 slim was actually a pretty good setup.
They also have the Xbox One S, which added 4K output, yeah, but functionally it was the same as an Xbox One.
And I think to a certain degree, you just got to there should be an updated Switch. There should be one that has...
stuff that doesn't break.
A more solid
My Switch
screen.
Is not broken.
Mine hasn't either.
I know, but that you didn't get a first generation Switch.
I did. And mine has worked well.
I'm talking to Scott. Scott, you didn't get a first generation Switch.
Right.
Things cracked and melted and all that stuff.
But I think you have to have an updated Switch that has a good built-in storage, like actually gigabytes of storage loaded into the actual machine.
How about just 1 gigabyte? They only need 1 gigabyte.
As opposed to having to go out and buy SD cards in addition to buying your new console. I think that's kind of just something that has to happen. And I'm okay with that. I don't mind them doing that.
Well, here's the thing. If they're going to want to have people go into their store and buy games digitally, they have to have a larger hard drive. I mean, here's the thing. The original Xbox 360, if you recall, had the option to not have the hard drive because they were counting on people buying those Dreamcast-like memory sticks that you could put into the Xbox 360 and store things there. Microsoft found out quickly that wasn't a very good solution. You know, and from then on, they said, no, there's going to be a hard drive in here. Period. End of story.
If you're going to buy the eventually announced Red Dead Redemption 2 for Nintendo Switch,
yeah,
you're gonna
get Civilization 6 for the Switch.
You're gonna need that 105 gigabytes of storage space that that Red Dead Redemption 2 takes up.
Did you see the mobile version of Civ 6?
I did see the I saw the Switch version.
There's a mobile version of Civ 6.
Oh, I didn't see that. I saw the Switch version.
No, there's a mobile version of Civ 6, and apparently it's fully functional.
That's cool. Kind of.
I can just picture Scott here just going around with his cell phone and playing Civ 6 while he's waiting for Switch.
I would still rather play the Switch version because it has buttons, and then there's also the touchscreen. So.
Yeah.
Well, the problem with that, though, is the battery life. I mean, a cell phone has far better battery life than the Switch does.
I mean, arguable, but...
Arguable? It's a fact.
There are outlets around, you know, just one of those.
Yeah, but that sort of defeats the purpose of having something mobile, you know?
Oh.
You want to be able to play it on the train.
Well, that's why you get the Switch 2.0, which has an improved battery life.
Or it has a USB outlet so that you can attach a battery to it.
I just don't like the idea that I've already bought the Switch. I don't want to have to buy another Switch. You know, it's just like,
I don't think the Switch is going to be any more powerful than the Switch that you already own. I just think it's going to be better made.
Yeah.
And maybe have more memory. I mean, I don't think it's going to be like going from an Xbox to an Xbox One X.
I really do think it's going to be sort of an all-in-one package that you and I didn't have to buy, Scott, where like hard drive and battery life will be improved.
Yeah.
And maybe the you know what they really need to improve on? The Joy-Cons. Maybe they'll make it so that the Joy-Cons are larger.
Maybe. I mean, like, there's the Pro Controller. I think they need to figure...
I know there's a Pro Controller, but, you know, the thing that comes with it, the entire point is that you can snap that thing in two and have two controllers.
Right, and what
you
I
know?
Was about to say
and I'm thinking
is
maybe
that...
they're going to have it so that those two little Joy-Con controllers are larger, and so that, you know, so that you can have someone who isn't a baby can use them without hurting their thumbs yeah. and fingers and getting carpal tunnel.
Right, and what I was about to get at is that they need to make a version of the Pro Controller that snaps in two and can hook onto the side of that thing like a Joy-Con.
Yeah, but would there be two of them?
Yeah, sure. There would be a left and a right one.
Yeah, sure. Anyway. Well, we'll see. I mean,
I don't see why it's any less feasible than anything else that's
being made.
Was it 2015
or 2016? When did the Switch come out? Was it 2015?
It was March 2016.
So basically we're coming on to the 3-year mark, which is about the time when you have a new SKU of a console. You know, I mean, the PlayStation 1 Slim came out. Well, no, that's a bad example because that was actually released like 20 years after, you know, when the PlayStation 2 got its Slim model.
I was
saying, let's make a PlayStation 1 Slim.
I was wrong. It was March 2017, last year.
Oh, okay. So that's kind of then it seems to me more like this version won't suck as much as our previous output. You know, we heard the complaints, and now we're just going to make minor physical changes.
I mean, it's still coming in 2019, so that hits the 2-year mark for a Slim.
3-year.
Has it been 3-year on some? I feel like it's been 2 years on some.
No, I think the new SKUs come out like 3 years. I mean, like the Xbox One X came out in 2016, I want to say, and the Xbox One came out in 2013. Anyways, it's irrelevant. I mean, we don't even know if this thing exists yet. It's just, you know, the Wall Street Journal saying, yeah, they're going to be bringing an updated version of the Switch. Whatever that means, you know, it could just mean it's made out of better plastic, and that's about it. That's all we know, really. We just know... I mean, it could have a brighter, thinner screen. I mean, that's basically what people wanted from the 3DS was a bigger screen, so the 3DS XL came out.
I do like the 3DS XL bigger screens than the original 3DS. It does make it easier to see the screen and do things.
I mean, maybe it'll be bigger Joy-Cons, you know, but like I said, you know, like also TJ said, you know, you have the Pro Controller, so, you know, if you don't like the Joy-Cons, you can get that. Or you can get one of the third-party
things. I do like the
because,
Pro
you know,
Controller. It is a lot more easier to use.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next and final news item. Overcooked 2 gets Sunny Island DLC available now. And this comes to us from Game Informer. Team 17 has announced Surf and Turf DLC for Overcooked 2. Now you can check out Island Food with new missions available on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. The Surf and Turf DLC includes 12 new story levels, new menu items like the skewers and smoothies, a water pistol allows you to clean plates from a distance, and 3 new chefs to play around with. The DLC is available right now on all platforms for $6. So when I said I wasn't playing Vampyr yet, the reason is I was playing the first Overcooked. Because it was free on for Xbox Live Gold. And I've seen it, and you know it is really, really fun. The problem is I'm playing single player, and that game is really meant for co-op. It's hard to play on single player because you have to switch between two chefs. I'm pretty sure with 4 chefs, it's a blast because you have your friends screaming at each other. No, I'll chop this. You go over there and clean the plates, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like a Bolivian army drill. You know, it's like everybody do your thing, you know. And people screw up because they start doing, you know, no, I was doing the tomatoes. You do the lettuce. Have either of you played them?
No.
I haven't. But
Okay.
You see.
Overcooked is really fun. It is a family game. And basically what you're doing is you're making these recipes. The recipes appear up on the screen, and you have your chef, and your chef picks up stuff. They process stuff, whether it's chopping stuff or putting meat in a griddle or stuff like that. And then you put all the ingredients on a plate, and then you serve it. And you're trying to serve as many dishes as you can before they run out. And if you let one run out, it's a missed order, and you get docked. And it's very cartoony. It's very, very fun. So, yeah, if there's a game you ever want to play with kids, you know, on a same machine thing, it's one of those – I really think it's one of those gateway games.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. All I really know about cooking games is Cooking Mama.
This is better than Cooking Mama. You only have one person cooking in Cooking Mama. Here you have a bunch of people running around. And by the way, sometimes they have it so like things slide around. So I can't reach the dishes anymore. Here, you're on the other side. Help me. That sort of thing. I mean, it's fun to watch even just on Twitch.
I haven't had a chance to see this one, but I would totally. That sounds like something fun.
Yeah, Scott, especially you. You should really get Overcooked.
Okay.
It's on Switch.
Oh, that is good then.
Like I said, if you know, I strongly recommend Overcooked or Overcooked 2, which is the sequel, because Overcooked 2 allows you to actually toss ingredients at each other, which you can't do in the first one. And it's easy to play with younger kids because you can just tell them, okay, go there and then do this. You know, pick up the fruit, take it to the dish, and then just press X and hack at it. You know, and just. It's easy to play, but there's something about it that makes it, you know, adults are playing it, and it's like a party game almost. Anyway, I'm done. I got the paycheck from Team 17. No, seriously, I haven't gotten Overcooked 2 yet. I've seen other people playing it, and, you know, it seems like I might shell out the $17 for Overcooked 2. I mean, the DLC can wait. But I also need people who are going to play it with me, because there's no way I'm going to play that game solo. It's a good game played solo. It's a much better party game when you play with multiple players. Anyways, we're going to talk about some gaming history. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Gaming history. The Blood Plague of 2005. The Corrupted Blood incident was a virtual pandemic in the MMO. The Corrupted Blood incident was a virtual pandemic in the MMORPG World of Warcraft, which began on September 13th, 2005, and lasted for 1 week.
You know, I'm going to check and see if that was a Friday.
Blizzard introduced a new raid called Zul'Gurub into the game as part of a new update. Its end boss, Hakkar, could affect players by using a debuff called Corrupted Blood, which did a significant amount of damage to the player over time. The disease could be passed on between nearby characters and would kill characters with lower levels in a few seconds, while higher level characters could keep themselves alive. It would disappear as time passed or when the character died. Due to a programming error, when hunters or warlocks dismissed their pets, those pets would keep any active debuffs until summoned again.
Yeah, just so you know, people would heal all their characters, right? But they never realized, oh, maybe I should heal my pet. Mm-hmm.
Non-player characters could contract the debuff and could not be killed by it, but it can still spread to other players. In effect, this turned them into asymptomatic disease carriers. At least three of the game's servers were affected. The difficulty in killing Hakkar may have limited the spread of the disease. Discussion forum posters described seeing hundreds of bodies lying in the streets of the towns and cities. Deaths in World of Warcraft are not permanent, as characters are resurrected shortly thereafter. However, dying in such a way is disadvantageous to the player's character and incurs inconvenience.
By the way, if you're a low-level character, though, you would die, then you'd resurrect, then you'd die immediately again. And it was sort of like, die... what's it called? Die, resurrect, walk a little bit, die. So it's sort of like dying while you're walking.
They call that corpse pushing.
Die, walk, die, walk, die, walk, die, walk.
Yeah. Sounds like a great time for priests who want to raise their resurrection spell.
I remember this as incident when I was on the servers.
We can go on because there's still – what's it called? We haven't finished the article.
During the epidemic, normal gameplay was disrupted. Player responses varied but resembled real-world behaviors. Some characters with healing abilities volunteered their services. Some lower-level characters who could not help would direct people away from infected areas. Some characters would flee to uninfected areas. And some characters attempted to spread the disease to others. Players in the game reacted to the disease as if they were a real risk to their well-being. Blizzard Entertainment attempted to institute a voluntary quarantine to stem the disease, but it failed, as some players didn't take it seriously, while others took advantage of the pandemonium. Despite certain security measures, players overcame them by giving the disease to summonable pets. Blizzard was forced to fix the problem by instituting hard resets of the servers and applying quick fixes. The major towns and cities were abandoned by the population as panic set in and players rushed to evacuate to the safety of the countryside, leaving urban areas filled to the brim with corpses, and the city streets literally white with the bones of the dead. The plague ended on October 8, 2005, when Blizzard made pets unable to be affected by corrupted blood, therefore rendering it unable to exist outside of Zul'Gurub. The corrupted blood incident was described as a fascinating yet accidental case study of modeling disease origins and the control at the Games for Health conference in Baltimore, Maryland, by Gama Sutra. They compared it to a real-life epidemic in that it had originated in a remote, uninhabited region and was carried by travelers to larger regions. Hosts were both human and animal, comparing it to the avian flu. Was passed through close contact, and there were people, in this case non-playable characters, who could contract it, but were asymptomatic. However, there were elements that differed from a real-world epidemic, including an indicator for carriers that they would have the disease and how much risk they are at, which cannot be done in real world. One aspect of the epidemic that was not considered by epidemiologists and their models was curiosity, describing how players would rush into infected areas to witness the infection and then rush out. This was paralleled to real-world behavior, specifically with how journalists would cover an incident and then leave the area. During 1 week of October 2008, a zombie plague was spread to promote the second World of Warcraft expansion, Wrath of the Lich King. Before its release, unlike Corrupted Blood, this plague was intentional and was dubbed by an authorized representative of Blizzard Entertainment as the Great Zombie Plague of 08. It was compared to Corrupted Blood by the Sunday Times, which described the zombie plague as being more true to life. The plague was...
Wait, stop. How can a zombie plague be true to life?
Maybe they meant it was more comparable to George Romero movies.
Yeah.
The plague was contagious, but in contrast to Corrupted Blood, which had 100% transmission to nearby characters, being in the vicinity of a character infected with zombie plague represented only a small risk of transmission. This meant that encountering a lone zombie was not as dangerous as encountering a large mass of infected. The event, which Blizzard ended on the 28th of October, earned the company both praise and criticism with its fans.
Okay, go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, that's the event that I remember, the October zombie plague incident, and the players had so much fun just swarming people and converting them to zombies and they would say, like, for the horde, and they would come and get you and turn you into undead, and it was a crazy thing. But, yeah, you see their dead corpses on the ground, and you respawn, and it is annoying because your armor, I think I remember, gets damaged when you die, so you have to go repair it. So it is annoying to have to do that, and especially if it happens over and over again, and the armor gets really damaged. But it was, it was crazy. You would try to go to the not as populated areas. I think if I remember the names right, Ironforge and,
Ironforge was a populated area.
Ironforge and Stormwind, I think, were the major, towns that were populated, at least by Alliance. And Dundrazil, I'm trying to remember the
Orgrimmar was for the Horde.
I meant the Night Elf city is not as populated, so that you could actually hide out a little bit there. But even then, they would, they would go there anyways and infect everyone. It was just crazy how fast it can spread.
Yeah, and it's actually being, a lot of people are saying that this actually, the 2005 plague, actually saved lives in a way that, you know, it was able, see, one thing you cannot do is study a plague, in a pandemic. It's impossible, because the last one we actually had was the Spanish flu one. I mean, you can call the AIDS epidemic, you know, sort of like, kind of a, no, it's not a, see, the Spanish flu killed off, like, Philadelphia alone had so many dead, it filled up 12, there were 12 times more dead that can fit in a warehouse. And they not only ran out of coffins, but they ran out of wood to make coffins. That's how bad the Spanish flu became in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one out of, you, the Spanish flu, you could die 12 hours after contracting it. That's how fast it was.
It is insane that in the last century, there was a disease that killed half of the population of the UK.
But the point is that we don't have many times that we can study a pandemic of this range. This range. And especially, here's the difference between this and a real pandemic. Death is not permanent.
Yeah.
You know, no one actually dies. Just your character dies.
That's very true.
You know, in a real pandemic, you know, it's hard to, you know, to do studies on it because, A, you're not going to introduce one just to study it, you know. And it's hard to do it, you know, without computer models. But this was actually a live model. This was actual people reacting to it, and it was fascinating to see how people reacted to it.
Yeah. It's really... I mean, like, I was never huge into World of Warcraft. I wasn't around for any of that. But, like, I can't even imagine something on that. It's a really interesting set of parameters that came into play in the perfect storm for World of Warcraft, where you have the hunter class with the pets, this weird thing that pets keep a...
Well, you also had the warlocks could summon their own things. There were zombie skeletons and
stuff
like that.
Either way, you have these specific classes that have pets. You have those pets that keep afflictions if they're put away. And then you have that situation where you bring them back to a place where people can convene en masse.
Well, here's the thing. You could not leave that region with the corrupted blood. Once you left the region, you were cured of it. They did not count on people putting away their infected pets. And since they were not, since the pets were not actually leaving the region, they kept the disease.
Right.
Because here's the thing, the corrupted blood was a nuisance at most to the high-level characters, because Zul'Garub was a really high-level area. But now you have the disease loose in a place where you have level, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 10. You know, even level 20 people would get killed by it. Because it would keep ticking off your health.
And then
what's
more
in
that perfect
story? Some people would actually ward people off from saying, I'm stay away from me. You know, they would hold up a sign or something that say, I'm infected, don't stay near me.
And then you also have the addition in that perfect storm of being able to infect NPCs that just hold that affliction and pass it back and forth between players and NPCs, going back and forth over and over again, and turning populous hubs into death zones.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You can kill if you're of the other faction. Like, Alliance can kill Horde, you know, NPCs, and vice versa. And that would be the only way to get rid of them, is if you actually had another... if you had the opposing Horde, you know, if you had a Horde come in and just kill all the shopkeepers,
purify.
You know, in Stormwind, that would cure them.
You would have to have an agreement between a group of people where they agree to come in and kill all of the NPCs and all of the pets afflicted without having to deal with it, and then get out quickly and kill themselves so that it doesn't continue to spread.
You can heal yourself of the disease. I mean, they had healing stations in which high-level priests would be healing people, you know, curing them of the disease. The problem is, that's inadequate.
Yeah.
I mean, in a real pandemic, you're going to have people who are, you know, doctors who are trying to heal, but that's like trying to stave off a storm. And even if you say killed all the shopkeepers in Stormwind, well, guess what? Someone comes in with a friggin' pet that they don't know is infected, and oh, here we go again.
Yeah, domino effect.
I mean, it's unfortunate we just can't, you know, have someone come in a real pandemic and just reset everything. Okay, we're resetting the world.
I mean, how many things do you think that players tried on their own before Blizzard literally said, nothing will be done about this, there's nothing that can be done about this, we have to take the matter into our own hands?
Well, here's the thing. They tried to do it. You know, they tried doing quick fixes, you know, and all that stuff. But the problem is that in order to get rid of it completely, you have to sterilize the entire world of Azeroth, which is basically they sterilized Azeroth. Mm-hmm. They took the world, killed everything in it, and just wiped it clean before restarting it. It was sort of like taking a scalpel and putting it in a sterilization thing. Kill all the germs, okay, comes back. It's something you can't do in real life, what they had to do. Sort of, if you think about Halo, it's sort of what the rings are for, you know? Well, how do you kill a flood? Well, you kill their food, so we wipe out all life in the galaxy. So, yeah, it was more interesting than when someone killed Lord British.
Yeah. It's like Thanos snapping his fingers twice.
Yeah. Except his motivations in the movie was stupid. At least in the comic books, he was trying to impress a girl. Yeah. in the movies, it's well, there's no reason for you except someone tells you, well, we don't have resources. Well, snap your fingers and double the resources.
Yeah, but that's what makes him even more of an asshole as a villain, is that his logic is flawed and awful.
Yeah.
No, it's just that they here's the thing with the real Infinity Gauntlet storyline. It was a long, involved storyline with a lot of layers to it, and you can't put it into a 2-minute movie, so they just make the dumb version of it. Oh, yeah, he's just going to do it because he's a prick.
I mean, even in the comics, his whole spiel was, I want to impress death. That's pretty simplistic.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it's a motivation. It is a motivation.
He has a motivation in the movie. It's just flawed.
No, it's just stupid. At least you're trying to get in bed with a chick who's not impressed with you unless you kill half the universe, because she is death. And it's funny is that they had to make death a woman because he had to give Thanos a case that are not gays.
But the movie is missing, like, the Silver Surfer, Galactus, and Adam Warlock. So it does. Mm. Yeah.
Well, for one thing, Adam Warlock is the entire heart of the friggin' story to begin with.
I don't want to spoil things, but
gems.
I don't want to spoil things, but Adam Warlock is not missing.
Oh, he just hadn't shown up yet?
Mm-hmm.
I did see the end of that.
Well, if you hadn't established him in the first movie, it's one big Deus Ex then. Literally. Anyways, we're going to go into listener feedback. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. We have listener feedback from, is it Rafe or Ralph? Ralph. Okay, anyways. We have listener feedback from Ralph. Hi, guys. Thanks for this and the few last episodes. I was very busy for the last week, so I was not able to write a comment. Sorry for that. You deserve listener feedback. Well, thank you, Ralph. Regarding Telltale...
Well, keep in mind, Ralph is German, so... I mean, he's German, so this is a second language for him.
That's fine. I have trouble reading and speaking out loud, so it's just blaming on me. I'm stuttering. Regarding Telltale, in my opinion, this is unfair to treat the employees like that. I am happy that something like that is not possible in Germany. We got special insurance for such a situation. Yeah, I actually was talking to a friend about this, and apparently in Europe, when someone's going to let you go, they give you a month notice. Like, okay, we're letting you go, and here's like a month's worth of paycheck. That's insane to me.
Well, here's the thing.
Cobra, and it's hot garbage. Cobra is the worst possible contingency plan. Cobra insurance is what they give you when you get laid off, and it's like complete shit.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. They did have – there was a law against it in California, but they got around that law somehow by saying it was a – you know – it isn't – I don't think it's the – if you have – if you're bankrupt, it's something else, which is more of a catastrophic version you know, that says, well, okay, now you can fire people without severance because of this specific situation, and Telltale invoked that, which is why they're able to. The thing is that people are challenging that claim.
Yeah, they're filing lawsuits against him, which is what people are saying is a lot of the reason why Telltale let go of the last 25.
So yeah, we do have the 2 weeks notice, we do have severance pay and all that stuff, but Telltale got around that by claiming, and I'm not going to get into technical terms, just that they got around that by claiming exemption to the law.
Yeah, well, you also have to be a permanent employee, and they do a lot of this temp thing, which was a problem I had.
Well, even contractors, if you've been employed by them for a certain amount of time, you're no longer a contractor.
Yeah. Well, then that's why they let you go and say, well, we can't.
That's why they're suing. That's why people are suing, because they're saying bullshit to Telltale. Yeah.
Unfortunately, like a lot of states in the United States are still very corporate heavy, and termination at will is a thing. And
they want to bring back child labor, for crying out loud, some of these
states. Yeah. So I wish we could move forward in something like a system like they have in Europe.
But I wish I had a nice polo mallet.
I wish we could move forward in any of the many fields, but it's just like – anyways, we want to get back to Ralph's
– Let's move on.
Feedback.
Let's go on to – let's talk about the about people stopping a game in Switzerland over esports.
God. But in addition, it is sad because I liked Telltale and the games they made. To our neighbors in the Swiss, this is such a stupid move, and I have read this as well. Your comment that I don't want to fight for animal rights by throwing kitties at animal shelter perfectly describes how stupid this protest action was.
Reference to what? I think TJ was the one who said that.
That, yes. regarding the Tetris topic, I played a lot of Luminance, and I loved the game for its simplicity, like Tetris. Such games you are able to play for half an hour and don't have to remember any story or complicated moves. This is true. Most of the newer games, you need to know every button on the joypad, have hours of storytelling, complex storylines. I don't judge us, but these games are not games you are able to play for some minutes. Gex, you have to invest a lot of time. To the question of the week, as already mentioned in the episode, I would love to see another Back to the Future Telltale game. Me too. I agree. At least somebody agrees with me. I think.
Well, the thing is, the reason why I'm not for it is that it ended so perfectly.
Yeah.
With Doc and Marty just saying, yeah, let's pretend we never saw that.
Right. I think I already mentioned it once, but I am a real Back to the Future fanatic. My right leg is completely tattooed with Back to the Future. Do you know why?
That sounds rad.
Yeah, he doesn't. Anyways.
Maybe it's one big DeLorean on his leg.
At least.
I don't know if I'd want Michael J. Fox tattooed on me at any place, or Christopher Lloyd.
But last but not least, TJ, congratulations to your wedding. I wish you all have a beautiful marriage and will stay together forever. Greetings from Germany and have a nice week.
If I was going to.
Yeah, they'd only been engaged for the past 30 years.
10 years. One decade, not
Are
three.
Are you sure it wasn't 30? Since I'm sure it wasn't an arranged marriage and you just had to wait.
Oh, my God. All I know is that if I was going to get old. All I know is that if I was going to get a Christopher Lloyd tattooed on me, it would have to be Back to the Future 2 version with the wraparound shades.
That was a cool one. There's a T-shirt, actually, which has both Doc and Marty, and it splices them where they have parts of each outfit from each of the movies.
That's so cool. Mm.
You know what I liked about the posters is that on the Back to the Future poster, you had one person, Marty. Yeah. Then on Back to the Future 2 poster, you had two people, and Marty and Doc. One. And then Back to the Future 3, you had Marty, Doc, and Clara.
Oh, also Biff Tannen with the switch bat, the bat that he presses a button and it extends, because that is the best accessory in any Back to the Future movie.
No, actually, what I love is he tries to hand back the hoverboard to the girl and says, "Forget that. I have a pit bull now."
Mm-hmm.
So look for our show note. Go ahead.
I know. It's just you're having a laugh.
Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback. So leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. And you can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. Now, we're recording on a Thursday. We might have to record on a Thursday just so we can give people time to actually respond to the episode.
That sounds good.
So yeah, we will see you next week. And now with Scott's new mic, I have a lot less work.
That's good.
We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Be cool. Have fun. Play games, y'all.